What I'm going to do now is I'm going to interrupt Neil Young. I'm sure Neil Young won't mind because I've got somebody very, very special to talk to. It's the wonderful Bill Maynard. Good evening, sir.
Good morrow, Sean.
How are you doing?
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Good stuff. Now, listen, obviously the younger audience will know you as Claude Greengrass.
Yeah.
Yeah? But it's not just Greengrass that, you know, you're... How many years in the business?
Well, I've been actually performing since the age of 8, so that's about 76 years.
So, 76 years?
Yep.
That is some mean feat, sir, isn't it?
It's a long time, but one of the most amazing things is I've done 60 years on television.
60 on telly as well.
Which is amazing, and the wonderful thing about it is that it's been so varied. I've had so many different sort of guises over the years, and in comedy mostly, of course. But, you know, I've had the fortunate chance to do things like Kisses at 50, which, of course, won the BAFTA award, and a lovely play called Love Affair, which is almost a two-hander that I did with the lovely Celia Johnson, who most people of my age would remember from Brief Encounter with Trevor Howard, and that was an amazing play to do. That won an award too, which was nice.
That's absolutely amazing. I've got to ask you, how true is this that Maynard isn't actually your real name?
No. My real name is Williams. My real name is Walter Williams. And then when I was a little boy, there was a very famous variety comedian called Billy Williams, the man in the velvet suit. So I was known as Little Billy Williams, the boy in the velvet suit. And then I became, when I became a bit older, when I became a band singer around the age of 16, 17, I then became Bill Williams, and then when I went to the BBC in 1952 and I passed my audition in Aeolian Hall in Bond Street, they said to me, right, we'd like you on next week, but can you possibly change your name? We have far too many Williamses in Welsh choirs and Welsh orchestras, and we're always sending the checks to the wrong person. And I knew that probably mine would be the smallest one. So I wandered down Bond Street into Piccadilly Circus, and they wanted to know by 1 o'clock, and it was about 11 then, and I'm looking around, and all of a sudden I saw a flashing sign saying Maynard's Wine Gums. So I rang them up, and I said, how about Maynard? And they said, just a minute, we'll do a check. And they said, yes, that's all right, we haven't got one of them. So I became Bill Maynard.
That is an amazing story. I actually did hear about the wine gums, but I just had to ask you because, you know, but that is the truth. Maynard's wine gums.
Absolutely, sir.
That is brilliant.
Yes, I could just have easily been Bill Hovis.
Yes.
Or even Bill Daz.
Well, were you not the baker in the Hovis advert as well?
Yes, I was. That was the most incredible thing. I was the old baker who never said a word at the bottom of the hill, and it was, you know, the lad on the bike came in and just took his cap off, gave him a cup of tea and a slice of Hovis, and that was it. But that was many, many moons ago.
Who was the lad on the bike? Can you remember?
I've no idea.
No.
We're talking, what, I don't know, 50-odd years at least.
Yes, that's a long time ago, isn't it? I mean, how would you sort of land a part like that? What would happen? Where was it advertised that they needed somebody?
Well, what actually happens is that normally the producers of the film, you know, the advertising agents, they get in touch with different agents and say, could you send a job lot of actors along? And you usually go along and they look at you. It's almost like a, you know, the lineup the police do. They line you up and if you're not speaking, they just pick the one they look right, think looks right for the part.
Well, you obviously must have looked good then.
I wouldn't particularly say I looked good, but I did look right for the part. I think there's a vast amount of difference there.
I was being polite, sir.
You don't have to be with me, but I never am.
Okay, thank you.
I tell you something. One of my great problems is I do tend to say what I think, and I'm very opinionated, and I try to be very truthful, and sometimes, to my own detriment, sometimes I say things that I've done are absolute rubbish, and as I say it, but if that's how I feel, on the other hand, of course, most of the things I've done have been absolutely wonderful.
Brilliant. That's it.
I love talking about my favourite subject.
Yeah, Kibworth Grammar School, that was, didn't you study there, Kibworth Grammar School?
Yes, I won a scholarship. I don't know how, because I came from a council estate. I was a lower working class lad, and I passed a scholarship and went to this grammar school, and that opened my eyes. The first thing I ever learnt there was when you have a bowl of soup, you tip it away from you. So they put me right there, and the next thing that I learnt, which has been a great asset through my life, is that we did things like geometry and all of that. And I found out that at the end of a geometrical equation, you wrote the letters QED, you know, which, of course, the title of many a television program. And I found out that they were Latin for quod erat demonstrandum. And I've used that, which means this having been proved, of course, at the end of a geometrical equation. So I have used that in many programs, and I used it actually a lot in Heartbeat, purely and simply to let the viewers think that there was more to Greengrass than just an old road, to make them think that he'd probably been a professional man at some time, you know, a lawyer or a doctor or someone who'd had either a nervous or a monetary or a financial breakdown and decided to live off his wits with his dog, you know. So when I do a character, I try to put much more than the norm into it. So when somebody said something to me, I used to say, that's a bit quod erat demonstrandum. And they used to say, what does that mean? And I said, I've got no idea. I saw it on the telly.
What a wonderful story.
Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. It's like you see Selwyn Foggett. When I did Selwyn Foggett, he always had a copy of the Times in his pocket. And so he said, why has he got a copy of... And it led to jokes like somebody saying... I said, I'm thinking of taking a new job. And they said, what are you doing, Selwyn? I said, well, there's an advert in the Times for somebody to do colonic irrigation. And they said, well, what do you know about colonic? And I said, well, I've been digging ditches for years. So you see, I always used to try and do things like that, which made it not just a basic character. There's much more to the character. And that is what I brought into Heartbeat. When Stuart Doughty, the producer, who asked me to come in, and he said to me, look, Bill, it's not the lead, but if you can make something of the character, we'll see if we can do a spin-off, because at that time he didn't think it would go far. And so I had almost carte blanche to change all my lines and put the comedy in it, and that's what he wanted. And so that is how I approach anything. I try to bring something to it that has never been heard before, which is why I've done what I've done with the new record, Wonderful World. I've tried to bring a sort of feeling to it that I'm making up the words and telling a story at brand new.
You know, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I didn't know what to expect. When I heard that you got a new song out, I mean, have you done any recording before? Any songs?
Oh, well, I've recorded for Decca and EMI.
Okay.
I've been Abbey Road Studios. I was fourth in the Eurovision Song Contest Preceder, which was called A Song for Europe, in 1957. You see, in the days of variety, well, before I started acting, every comic had to finish off his act with a song. Not like today, they can just say, that's my time, thanks for having me, and off they go. But in those days, you had to do a sort of complete act, and most comics did finish off with a song. Sometimes it was a comedy song, and I have done comedy songs through the years. You know, I've done, as you know, I did the, you know, I'm Not a Pheasant Plucker. I did that song. and I've, in fact, I've just done another one that is almost ready for release called I'm My Own Grandpa.
Okay.
It's a country song written in 1936 that most country people like Willie Nelson, etc., have recorded. But I've given that, I think, a new slant.
Okay, when's that due for release?
Don't know yet. Because we're trying. Well, my new management company, which I took on about 3 months ago, they came up with, because their sort of musical guy who was in charge of all the music is Paul Fenton, who is the drummer with T-Rex. He had sort of seen me and said, how would you like to do this version of Wonderful World? And I thought, what a lovely idea. So as I say, now they're asking me, having heard that they want to do a complete album in the same style.
Okay.
And so we're working on that next.
Brilliant. I'm eagerly awaiting that, because, as I said, I didn't know what to expect. And when I heard it, I thought, that is absolutely brilliant.
That's wonderful.
It's just something.
All I'm wanting now is for something like Radio 2 to start playing it.
Yeah, we can work on that, I'm sure.
Well,
I'm sure we can.
You can do, Sean, to help me out. I'm in need, and that would be absolutely wonderful.
Well,
because you see, my son, who now he's been living in France for about 20 years, he's a singer, you see, a musician, and he's never had a big hit. And I would love, and he's been in the business since about 14. I think he's 60 odd now, and I would love to have a hit before him. Can you? It's like a sibling thing, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
he's a proper singer. No, he really is. I mean, he's been all the musicals and things like that for years, and you know, so he's a proper singer.
A proper singer? Well, that's a proper song what you've done anyway.
Yes, it's a proper song, but as you say, it is done in an entirely different way.
Yeah.
And that is what I can do now. I mean, when I used to make records in the old days, and many records I've made, I've done, as you probably know, there's a DVD out that I've just been given permission by ITV to use for my own use. It was a DVD made by them of Heartbeat. One of them's Heartbeat, and the other one's Walking the Dog. You know, the Thomas hit, you know.
Oh, well, yeah.
Black, dressed in black. I did them both in a pub in London. I shot them.
You did them in a pub in London?
Yeah. With a full band. My son actually produced the CD. And then Yorkshire filmed it with an audience sitting in the pub in London.
Oh, well, when you said a pub in London, I had visions of you gate crashing a karaoke or something.
No, it's a full band. It's not a tape. Uh-huh. All the band are in there playing away, a country band, you know, and it's... I'm amazed that it's not been a hit before now.
Yeah. you briefly mentioned earlier Selwyn Froggatt.
Yeah.
And you were speaking to me yesterday, and you said about the audience figures of Selwyn Froggatt.
Well, I didn't know. When you're doing something, when you're the actor, and especially, you know, if you're the leading actor, I didn't know any. I didn't know really. Well, I knew it was a network number one for a long time. But about 3 months ago on television, they played a program called TV Blockbusters, and they played a shot from it, and they said, this program, it's Selwyn Froggatt, was watched by 29 million, which I was amazed that it was that big.
That is phenomenal. I would never have guessed.
No.
29.
Neither would I, 29 million. And, of course, I had another hit with a thing called The Life of Riley, which actually knocked, I was told, the Quatermass experiment, which was on television, had been on number one for 16 weeks. We knocked it off its slot.
Really?
And, of course, the gaffer, of course, was another thing that was enormous. And as I say, one of the things I did that I never realised, you know, because it was a drama, was Kisses at 50, which won Colin Welland the the BAFTA award, and I mean that was made into a film, and Gene Hackman played my part, the swine, and that was called, they called it in America the second time around, but it was a wonderful play. And in fact, I did an Alan Titmarsh show about sort of 12 months ago, and Alan said that it was his favourite, his father's favourite drama that he'd ever seen on television.
Mate,
which was lovely.
It is. That's a very good accolade, that. It really is.
Well, the wonderful thing, you see, and that is why we did Wonderful Life, because my life has been absolutely wonderful, and I have done, I should think, virtually every aspect of show business apart from ballet. I've done all the classic roles, like Archie Rice in The Entertainer, and Davis in the Caretaker, and Truscott in Loot, and so many things. Elwood P. Dowd in Harvey, and Big Daddy in Cat on a Hot Route, Tin Roof. All those things I've done. Yeah. Even played Joxer in Juno in the Paycock, the Sean O'Casey thing on Scottish television when I had to become an Irishman. And of course, most of the stuff I've done has been based in Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. So I've had to acquire a Yorkshire accent, and the most wonderful compliment I was ever paid is most Yorkshire people think I'm from Yorkshire, which you can't get. I mean, forget any critics. You can't get better than that.
I've got to say, you are the reason I had my first ever detention at school.
Really?
Yeah, because I used to run around the playground with my thumb in the air shouting, "It's magic!"
Well, magic, you see, became probably the best catchphrase throughout the world, and that was really down to Selwyn Foggett.
It was, Selwyn Foggett.
It was an amazing thing to have happened, you know. It's wonderful to have that sort of thing, but it's like when I look back, I mean, one of the things I told my new management agency, and I said, look, I've watched this program, Britain's Got Talent, and it seems to me they're missing out, because there's nobody who's got more knowledge of show business than I have. Mm-hmm. And because I've done it for 76 years, in every aspect, I've not just been a comic, I've been a singer, I've been a musician, I've done straight plays, I've done pantomime, I've done summer seasons, I've done, as I say, Shakespeare, I've even done opera, I was in Defledermaus with Opera North, and all of these things. I've done cabaret, I've done television, I've done radio. I mean, I've just finished 5 years on radio for Radio Leicester.
Really?
Since I had my stroke, of course, I'm slightly limited to the parts I can play.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of them if I did stand up, it would have to be sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you consider it, as I say, nobody seems to know that I've made records. And I'm not just for many companies, but including Decca and EMI,
yeah,
which is absolutely incredible.
I'm sure there's a lot of people with their jaws on the floor at the moment, agog.
One of the things that, you see, one great problem I have, apart from the fact that Greengrass really typecast me, because I've been doing that only for 20-odd years, and you see, most new producers, young producers, really don't know what I've done for the rest of my 60 years of television. They just see Greengrass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great problem with being typecast. When you've been in a thing, especially a thing that's so popular for so long, there's lots of people only see you like that. And the other thing that happened was one of the Radio 1 DJs mentioned that I was dead. And that was picked up by one or two papers, and they printed that I was dead. So I think, apart from the fact that I'm approaching 85, and I'm slightly disabled, and I'm typecast, and I'm very expensive, and, you know, it's very difficult for anybody to cast me.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're not dead. That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, no. But the other thing I thought I'd do, I was watching television one night, and I saw a poker being played, a thing called, I forget what it's called, Texas Hold'em.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, when I was doing the Carry On films, Now, that's something I don't normally mention, by the way, because when they come on, I'll go and hide behind the settee.
Why?
Anyway, when I was doing a carry-on, Sid James was a mad gambler, as you probably know.
Yeah.
And when they used to change the set, sometimes taking an hour, hour and a half, he used to organise a game for seven-card stud. And I got playing in that with him, you know. So I learned to play seven-card stud. And when I looked on television and saw this new thing that's being played, I thought, that's seven-card stud with a new name. So I decided I was going to have a go. So it took me a long time to get round to it. But eventually, I went to a little casino, and I enjoyed it so much, I've taken it up. And before I took on this new management agency, David Blaine Associates, I was intent on becoming a poker pro. And at the moment, I'm playing like 4 and 5 times a week in casinos and having the time of my life. I mean, most days I don't get home till about half past 4. And now and again, it's about 7. I mean, I'll come in with a milkman.
You're joking.
No, and I drive myself there and back, because I've got an electric scooter in the back of my car, and the lads come out of the security guys come out of the, I let them know I'm there, and they come out, get the scooter out for me. I sit on the scooter in the casino, I go and get off it, sit down at the table, and spend about 8 or 10 hours playing poker every night.
And until 7 in the morning?
And it's usually till about 6. By the time I get home, it's 7.
Oh, well, an hour here and there is okay. That's fine. So, why don't you mention the carry-ons?
Well, unfortunately for me, when I did my first ever film, I realised that I didn't know much about filming as such. I'd done television, but filming's different. And not only that, it was around 1960. Now, in 1960... because I'd gone from Variety at $1,000 a week then in those days, which is now a lot of money, I wanted to go into rep to learn to act, because I thought at that time, I mean, I was in awe of straight actors, yeah. And I thought, I want to learn how to do it, so I wanted to go into rep. Little did I know, you don't need any of that expertise whatsoever, because doing filming and doing filming in dramas and television in dramas is like falling off a log when you've been doing comedy. But I didn't know that. So I went from $1,000 a week to £9 a week in rep. Now, I was taxed in a thing called Schedule D. So I was paying last year's tax next year. So by the time it came to next year, I'm going. So then... I went skint to the end of the review. I didn't go bankrupt, because it was very in for a dig in those days. So I had to sell everything I'd got. I had 3 cars. I had an Austin Healey 104, a Studebaker Commander, and my late wife Muriel's car. So we got rid of those and the house and everything in it, anything of any value. And with a couple of cases, we got on a bus and left our home in Hampshire and came where we'd settled, and came back to Leicestershire, where one of her aunties gave her a spare room in her council house. And we had to start all over again. And at the time, I was working at the Nottingham Playhouse, because I was in the Nottingham Playhouse for a very long time. And eventually, of course, I had to work late nights. After I'd finished in the theatre, I used to have to go and do a midnight cabaret somewhere to earn some good money to pay off the minimum revenue, which I did eventually.
Good on you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, things started to happen, and I got them. My first play was, I think, the first Dennis Potter, Paper Roses, and I played the lead Harry in that.
Yeah.
And then, about 6 months later, I got Kisses at 50, which opened a whole new thing of drama for me on television. But then, right out of the blue, Granada offered me a sitcom called The Life of Riley, wanted me to play Frank Riley and that, and that went bang straight to network number one, and I was back being a comic again.
Absolutely. What a story. What a life you've had.
Well, it's been wonderful. It's been a wonderful world. No, but you see, even in my that's why my first autobiography was called The Yo-Yo Man. because I'd been up and down a lot.
Yeah.
But you see, because I went skint, I had to do things that normally I wouldn't have touched with a birch pole to earn money. But through doing those things, you learn, I've found, and I'm sure this is common knowledge now, I've learned more in adversity than when things go right. Mm-hmm. When you're doing things that you have to compensate in a way, and I mean, I had to work on sets that were, you know, on tour with plays, on sets that weren't very good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you couldn't get out of the door. Sometimes one of the bits of it started to fall down. I mean, all of these things can happen to you. But you learn from them. Mm-hmm. And you think, you don't say, I wish I hadn't done this. You say, right, next time, this won't happen. And it's like things, even philosophical things. I don't know why, but somehow, when I was at my lowest financially, I used to travel by train sometimes to London to do a job, and I was sent to a Smith's bookstore, and I don't know what happened, but I bought a little book called The Power of Positive Thinking. Now, it's a theological book written by Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, who's a Doctor of Divinity, and of course, I read it, and actually I tried to become religious for a while, but it didn't work for me. But at the end of each chapter, there's a group of things it tells you to practice. And one of the greatest things I think I ever learnt in my life was to do something you fear to do each day, mm-hmm. however small it may be. And then you have to do two things you fear to do each day, then three, and then four. And by the end of the month, you fear nothing.
Mm.
And when I say fear things, it's little tiny. The one thing that I did, when I used to get on the train to go to London, I used to buy a newspaper. I had about enough money for that. And I used to read the paper. And every morning, I wanted to say, when I'd read it, say to somebody, would you like the paper? And for some reason, I didn't. I was frightened. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But eventually, because of the power of positive thinking, I made myself offer it. And many is the time I offered it to somebody who was like very, very, looked a bit miserable. All of them, their faces broke into a smile, and they say, I've been wondering for the last 10 minutes how I could ask it if I could borrow it. Then I'd start to tell them about the power of positive thinking. And many times, by the time we got to Euston, they hadn't even read it. And I used to say, well, keep the paper because I've read it anyway. But it was one day, coming back from Euston, I went to get in the carriage and I saw three nuns. And I thought, I'm not getting in there. And I thought, what are you frightened of? So I made myself get in, and the lady said, we didn't expect to see you get in our compartment, young man. And I started to tell them about the power of positive thinking. And I had the most wonderful conversation with these three ladies. And it's things like that that have happened throughout my life, and that have made me what I am today.
Shall we play the song?
Which is, pardon?
Shall we play the song?
Yes, that would be lovely.
Let's play your song and then we'll come back for a brief chat after, yeah?
Wonderful show.
Okay, here we go. Bill, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you very, very much. As I said to you early on, I love talking about my favourite subject. Anyway,
yeah. honestly, I've had the time of my life. I really have listening. It's been
wonderful.
Thank
wonderful,
you.
Mate. Well, if anything you can do with promoting this, I'm going to do something else about this record, which I won't tell you now, Sean.
Okay.
Until if it becomes a hit, I'll let you know then.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you. I'll do my best to promote it as much as I can as well.
Okay, darling. Thank you very much indeed. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I do think it's quite emotional, and I'm quite proud of it.
Yes, it is. It certainly makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end.
Well, that is.
And it was
wonderful.
It was also one of my late mother's favourite songs as well. So.
Oh, how lovely.
One other thing I've got to ask you, Bill, before you go. My mother-in-law, Joy, comes from Northampton.
Oh, Yeah.
And she can remember you with Frankie Vaughan, she said.
Yeah.
At the New Theatre in Northampton.
Uh-huh.
And you sent her a box of chocolates and a Christmas card.
Did I?
Yes.
My goodness me.
And well, that's... That,
it, that was during the period, once upon a time in Variety, the top of the bill was always a pop singer.
Yeah.
And the sort of, what we used to call the bottom of the bill, which not is not the, that's what it meant, the full bottom of the bill, used to be usually a comic. And I worked with all sorts of people. I worked with, mostly with Dickie Valentine, and with the Beverly Sisters, and Alma Cogan, and all the singers of the time there who worked together, and I did the Nottingham Empire with Tommy Steele for his first ever Moss Empire date. He had done one at an Empire that wasn't a Moss Empire, Sunderland, I believe, a week or two previous. But his manager, who I owed a favour to, Harold Fielding, because he'd given me a job when I needed one, he said to me, because I was very big at the time, he said, billing-wise, he said to me, would you do the Moss Empire? He said, but I've got to get this lad playing to be top of the bill. Will you go full bottom to him? And I said, for you, Harold, because I owed him a favour.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And I went there, and I used to take Tommy home to my house in Leicester, because it's not terribly far away, and we became quite friends. And in fact, I introduced him to his wife, Annie, who used to work with me at the Windmill Theatre under the name of Annette Donati, although her real name was Annie Donoghue.
Brilliant.
As mine, once upon a time, was Little Billy Williams.
Absolutely. Billy, it's been, as I said, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak
absolute
to me.
Pleasure, Sean.
And I will speak to you very soon. And good luck with the single and the album.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we've got several songs ready for the album, so but they're mostly songs that tell a story, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Wandering Star, and and I'm going to do the Jacques Brel thing, Je me quitte pas, which is translated into If You Go Away. At Dusty Springfield had a massive hit with it. I've had a lot of help with that because my son actually does, in French, because he lived there for about 20 years now, a tribute to Jacques Brel.
Brilliant.
In cabaret, so...
Yeah.
So it's amazing how it all works around.
That all fits in. Well, thank you once again. Thank you very much.
Okay, Sean.
And I'll speak to you very soon.
Okay, mate.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
That was the wonderful Bill Maynard. you just don't know, do you? The background of these great British actors. Fantastic.